From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What are you guys going to do to make sure I don't have to watch my friends die? What are you going to do to make sure I don't have to wait 77 minutes bleeding out on my classroom floor just like my little sister did?
Residents of Uvalde, Texas, confront the city's school board over failures to protect the children at Robb Elementary School, where an 18-year-old gunman who was nicknamed School Shooter shot dead 19 fourth graders and their two teachers. Why didn't Governor Abbott attend any of the 21 funerals? We'll talk to Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez about a new state report that found systemic failures by the nearly 400 officers. That's right, almost 400 who responded to the massacre. Then we'll look at today's Democratic congressional primary in Maryland, where AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, has spent nearly $6 million in attempt to defeat former Congressmember Don Edwards. We'll speak to Peter Beinart of Jewish Currents about his new article, The Israel Lobby's New Campaign Playbook.
AIPAC and other establishment pro-Israel organizations have dumped unprecedented amounts of money in Democratic congressional primaries this year. And if their efforts succeed, they won't only stop the Democratic Party from supporting in any meaningful way Palestinian rights, they will also prevent the Democratic Party from mounting any significant progressive challenge to corporate power.
And we'll speak to the pioneering legal scholar Kimberly Crenshaw, who's launched a counteroffensive against right-wing attacks targeting critical race theory. She's hoping to run a CRT summer school this week that's inspired by the civil rights movement's Freedom Summer. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll from an unprecedented summer heat wave in Europe has topped 1,100, as temperature records across the continent are expected to fall again today. Fire crews are battling huge wildfires in Portugal, France, and Spain. Meanwhile, Britain remains under a national emergency alert with temperatures poised to hit 40 degrees Celsius today for the first time in UK history. That's about 104 degrees Fahrenheit. In London, doctors and nurses with Extinction Rebellion place stickers on the windows of JP Morgan's offices reading, "In case of medical climate emergency, break glass." The activists then carefully broke the glass panes in an act of nonviolent civil disobedience. In a statement, nurse Maggie Fay, who took part in the action, said, quote, "The world is heating because of our use of fossil fuels, and J.P. Morgan is funding this climate catastrophe. My code of conduct states I must act without delay if I believe that there's a risk to patient safety or public protection. That danger is here, and it is now," unquote. In China, forecasters are predicting scorching temperatures will return this week, with hundreds of millions set to experience triple-digit heat. On Monday, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the Paris Climate Accord's goal of limiting global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels was on life support. He was speaking at a climate conference in Berlin.
No nation is immune. Yet, we continue to feed our fossil fuel addiction. What troubles me most is that in facing this global crisis, we are failing to work together as a multilateral community. Nations continue to play the blame game instead of taking responsibility for our collective future.
Russian forces continued their relentless bombardment of Ukraine Monday, with Russian shells falling on the city of Sumy in the north, cluster bombs falling on Mykolaiv in the south, where at least two people were injured. In the Black Sea port city of Odessa, at least six people, including a child, were injured by a Russian missile attack that burned residences to the ground. In Washington, D.C., the Ukrainian First Lady, Olena Zelenska, is meeting Jill Biden at the White House today and is set to deliver an in-person address to Congress Wednesday. Meanwhile, the Russian independent channel known as RAIN TV held its first broadcast Monday since Russian authorities ordered it off the air in March over its coverage of the invasion of Ukraine. RAIN TV broadcast on its YouTube channel from exile in Latvia, which borders Russia. Its return to broadcasting came days after Latvia's president said he'll order mandatory military service for men between the ages of 18 and 27. Russian President Vladimir Putin has arrived in Tehran for talks with Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and Turkish leader Recep Tayyip Erdogan. The talks are officially aimed at shoring up the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad against anti-government rebels. But the trio are expected to discuss a deal that would allow Ukraine to resume grain exports through the Black Sea. Russia's state-owned fossil fuel giant Gazprom has warned customers in Europe it won't guarantee gas supplies through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. The Russia to Germany pipeline has been idled since July 11th for scheduled maintenance, and Gazprom says a technical issue involving a turbine will delay any restart for at least another 5 days. The announcement brought fresh concerns over Europe's gas supplies heading into the winter. On Monday, European Union officials signed a deal with Azerbaijan to double gas imports over the next 5 years. Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron welcomed United Arab Emirates leader Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed to Paris Monday, where the two signed a strategic deal to partner on energy projects. In Washington, D.C., the Biden administration said Monday the jailing of U.S. citizen and civil rights attorney Asim Ghaffour by a court in the United Arab Emirates had nothing to do with his past work as a lawyer for Jamal Khashoggi, the Washington Post columnist whose murder in 2018 was ordered by Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Ghaffour was arrested during a stopover in Dubai and sentenced to 3 years in prison and an $800,000 fine on charges of money laundering and tax evasion. UAE officials say the United States had requested his arrest, an allegation denied Monday by State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
What I can say is that we've seen no indication at this point that his detention has anything to do with his association with Jamal Khashoggi. But we are still gathering information. Again, as I said, we've raised this case at senior levels, and we are doing everything we can to ensure that Mr. Ghaffour is treated fairly and humanely.
Here in the United States, COVID-19 hospitalizations and deaths are continuing to rise. Officially, the U.S. is recording about 125,000 new cases each day. But public health officials warn that's only a small fraction of the true number of infections, with most positive at-home tests going unreported. The latest surge is being driven by the fast-spreading BA.5 Omicron subvariant, which is adept at reinfecting people who've recovered from a previous bout of COVID. The surge also comes as much of the U.S. has abandoned public health measures like physical distancing and masking in public. Meanwhile, the U.S. government's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said Monday he will retire by the end of President Biden's first term in office. That's 2025. Dr. Fauci is 81 and recently recovered from COVID-19. U.S. public health officials are warning of a severe shortage of vaccines needed to combat a growing outbreak of monkeypox. The CDC has confirmed over 1,800 cases of the viral disease since it was first detected in the U.S. in May, though a severe shortage of test kits means the true number of cases is likely far higher. More than 1.5 million U.S. residents qualify for a vaccine, but so far, the Biden administration has released just over 130,000 doses from a national stockpile. Meanwhile, Forbes reports that logistical, bureaucratic, and technical errors have slowed the distribution of nearly 7 million additional doses, which could take months to arrive. Monkeypox isn't fatal, but can cause fever, rashes, and extremely painful lesions. It's most often spread through close, intimate physical contact. So far, U.S. monkeypox cases have disproportionately affected men who have sex with men, though anyone can get the disease. In Ghana, health officials have confirmed two people who died of a hemorrhagic fever in June were infected with the deadly Marburg virus. It's the first time the virus has been observed in Ghana and just the second outbreak of Marburg in West Africa after a single case was detected in Guinea last year. Marburg is related to the Ebola virus. It circulates among fruit bats and primarily spreads between humans through direct contact with the bodily fluids of infected people. There are no vaccines or therapeutics to treat Marburg infections, which are often fatal. In reproductive rights news, Congressmember Cori Bush of Missouri and Minnesota Democratic Senator Tina Smith have introduced a bill that would codify into federal law access to medical abortion. This comes as Republican states across the country are attempting to restrict the distribution of abortion pills. In related news, the Mississippi abortion clinic at the center of the Supreme Court case that gutted Roe v. Wade has been sold and has no plans to reopen in the state. This comes after the Jackson Women's Health Organization announced it would move its abortion clinic to Las Cruces, New Mexico. It was Mississippi's last abortion clinic. To see our interview with the head of the clinic, go to democracynow.org. In West Virginia, a judge has blocked the state's 150-year-old abortion ban. Lawyers for the Women's Health Center of West Virginia argued the statute, which dates back to the 1800s, was void because it hadn't been enforced in over 50 years, and the state has since enacted other laws that allow abortion. Meanwhile, in Idaho, the state's Republican Party rejected adding language to their abortion platform that states the procedure should be allowed to save the pregnant person's life. In Florida, prosecutors seeking the death penalty for the gunman who pleaded guilty to killing 17 people, including 14 students, in a 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. This is Prosecutor Michael Satz speaking Monday.
I'm going to speak to you about the unspeakable, about this defendant's goal-directed, planned, systematic murder, mass murder of 14 children, an athletic director, a teacher, and a coach.
In Buffalo, the white 18-year-old gunman charged with killing 10 black people in a racist mass shooting at a Buffalo supermarket has pleaded not guilty to 27 counts of federal hate crimes charges. Attorney General Merrick Garland has not ruled out seeking the death penalty in the case, even though President Biden promised as a candidate he would work to end capital punishment. And in Brazil, far-right President Jair Bolsonaro held a meeting Monday with dozens of diplomats claiming, without evidence, Brazil's electronic voting system is vulnerable to fraud in October's presidential election. Bolsonaro spoke from Brazil's capital, Brasilia.
What I want the most with the election is transparency, because we want the winner to be the one who was really voted for. Ours isn't a trusted system, because it cannot be audited. It's impossible to make an audit of elections in Brazil.
Bolsonaro is seeking a second term and is trailing behind Brazil's former leftist president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who's currently leading in the polls. Bolsonaro opponents and electoral officials fear he's laying the groundwork to attempt to overturn October's election results. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Outraged residents of Uvalde, Texas, confronted members of the city's school board Monday, nearly 2 months after an 18-year-old gunman shot dead 19 fourth graders and their two teachers at Robb Elementary School. Speakers at the meeting included 17-year-old Jasmine Cazares. Her 9-year-old sister Jackie died in the shooting.
What are you guys going to do to make sure I don't have to watch my friends die? What are you going to do to make sure I don't have to wait 77 minutes bleeding out on my classroom floor just like my little sister did? I know there's nothing you can do to bring my sister back, but maybe, just maybe, if you do something to change this, you can prevent the next family from losing their child.
The school board's meeting came a day after a Texas House panel released a damning report on the response of local, state, federal law enforcement to the school massacre. The report found officers committed, quote, systemic failures and egregiously poor decision making. They found that nearly 400 officers, 400 rushed to the school, but it took them more than an hour to confront the gunman. Investigators found officers, quote, failed to prioritize saving innocent lives over their own safety. The report also revealed the gunman had earned the nickname school shooter.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 30 degrees Celsius. Thursday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a risk of scattered thunderstorms with a high of 28 degrees Celsius. Friday will be mainly sunny with a high of 29 degrees Celsius. Saturday will be sunny with a few clouds in the afternoon and a high of 29 degrees Celsius. Sunday there will be rain and a high of 26 degrees Celsius. Monday will be mainly sunny with some clouds in the afternoon and a high of 26 degrees Celsius. And finally, Tuesday will be mainly sunny with a high of 26 degrees Celsius.
Good morning, McGill University. This is Todor O telling you that CKUT has some of the coolest artists and tunes you can find anywhere in Canada. Present company certainly not excluded. You are listening to the new Spins Library on CKUT 90.3 FM. The songs you're about to hear will go towards your final grade, so I hope you're writing this down.
And now for some news you can use. Jeunesse Lambda is organizing a picnic for trans and non-binary youth between the ages of 14 and 30. The event is free and takes place this Saturday, July 23rd at 1:30 p.m. in Parc La Fontaine. Food will be provided, but you can also bring your own. To learn more, visit the Jeunesse Lambda Facebook page. And last Friday marked the return of the NDG Borough's weekly neighborhood farmers market. Every Friday from 1 to 6 p.m., you can buy fresh local produce at the corner of Monkland and Old Orchard, near the Monkland Tavern. And if you live in another borough, look up your local farmers market. There are at least 14 in Montreal this summer. Search for MTL Blog Farmers Markets. And the Grand Poutine Fest kicked off in Montreal last week. It's running in the Old Port from now until July 31st, and features plenty of creative flavor combinations. This year, all poutines are sold in reusable dishes, and part of each sale goes to the pediatrics nonprofit Opération Enfant Soleil. For more information, search for Le Grand Poutine Fest on Facebook.
You love me, that I'm making no mistake, G. Say that you love me, ooh, wow. Say that you love me, that you never will forget me.
I feel my heart bumping and I feel like it should bump into yours. You'll be feeling nothing and I feel like you'll be acting by force. I'll be training myself for the drill, but I'm hot cookies on the grill. I'll be turning so soft, you'll be eating for the thrill of it. Your empty tummy's got me sick of it, you're full of shit. You ain't aware that you'll be feeding off yourself. So take a look around you, choose your sugars, added to the juice around you. Life's so colorful, yet you hurt and die. Yet black and white survives, yet goddess in disguise. Tender life arrives, got the kids and wife. Your goals turn into rose, but this shit ain't a curse. When I'm a pros, I suppose that these are what we treasure life for. Not the bigger hoes, not the bigger clothes. We just catching bigger codes. Life is like a picture show. Realize that love is what the bigger picture shows. Yeah, yo. So as long as you be acting so cool, you'll never be so rough. Try to keep your eyes straight and see right through the bluff. My love's about the feels and the touch. I can't believe you gave away your crush. So as long as you'll be acting so cool, you'll never be so rough. Try to keep your eyes straight, I see right through the bluff. My love's about the feels and the touch. I can't believe you gave away your crush. Say that you love me, ooh, I. Say that you love me, that I'm making no mistake, G. Say that you love me, ooh, I. Say that you love me, that you never will forget me. Say that you love me, ooh, I. Say that you love me, that I'm making no mistake, G. Say that you love me, ooh, I. Say that you love me, that you never will forget me.
Yo, misunderstood, I'm still the outsider. Wish that I could keep my head brighter. But I misplaced, miss days when I was told to switch place. Lifestyle of the risky chase, I'm committed. Every motherfucking day, steady to climb, never decline. Until I find new ways to sink in my rhyme. The ink is dripping, the paper is drinking. This kid is thinking, the third person, the pertinent, impersonal. Tell you straight to new beginning. After all, this is the ground, time to get down. Give up the town, give up the sound, give up the crown. Let your sentiments around. I know them a creep to shoot me rounds. When I'm a beast can keep me down. I've been unleashed underground. Lost or found, still gotta count. Bless the present moment is bound. I'm sleeping on a mattress, that's better than a couch. I'm glad I worked it out. I've been evicted, never the victim of my route. Never they witness, but they know what I'm about. Watch me show you how. Then you probably be like, wow. You learn when we fell with music. Always knew myself, can't stand pumping gas for Shelly. My music is my wealth, but then my soul was overwhelmed. By my own, I can't you tell if 28 don't ring a bell. At least my fucking time gets fed.
Say that you love me, ooh, I. Say that you love me, that I'm making no mistake, G. Say that you love me, ooh. Say that you love me, that you never will forget me. Say that you love me, ooh, I. Say that you love me, that I'm making no mistake, G. Say that you love me, ooh, I. Say that you love me, that you never will forget me.
Magic is real, it's contained within an app. Put your feet up and watch Peking Duck appear with just a tap.
Magic is pizza, taco,
Savoy fish and chips,
shish kebab,
vindaloo, and spicy crispy chicken strips.
Download the Just Eat app in order food for delivery.
Hello and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized informative podcast aimed to be listened to in the shower, but you can really listen to it anywhere at all.
And we really do mean anywhere. You can listen to this on the International Space Station.
You can listen to it while you're waiting for your Snapchats to load.
You can listen to it while you're sending pictures on Snapchat to people on the moon in the space station.
You can listen to it while you're baking a scrumptious turnover pineapple and cherry cake with what on top?
Sprinkles?
Yeah, sprinkles.
Okay, you can listen to it anywhere. This is a podcast for the people who say they don't have time to listen to podcasts. We take the mysteries of the world and we debunk them before your very ears. I was going to say eyes, but it's a podcast. You listen to it.
So listeners send in questions they've always wondered the answer to, but never quite went as far as looking up. Questions like, is there a correct way to wipe your bum?
Why does our hair turn grey?
Why do we fall in love?
How much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could actually chuck wood? And loads, loads more.
I suppose you could say,
we expand your mind while you wash your behind.
And this week is no different.
This week's question is really, really good. It comes from a chef over in London working in a kick-ass restaurant. Look at that. We have kick-ass chefs listening to our podcast, Taz.
Take note, listeners.
This is from Mark O'Brien, who works in the dairy in Clapham, which is an amazing restaurant. He's asked us, why do we typically eat three-course meals? So this week's question is an absolute cracker. It comes from Mark O'Brien, who's a chef in a restaurant called The Dairy in Clapham in London. And he's asked us, why do we typically eat three-course meals?
First off, it's amazing that we have another chef listening to our podcast. I love chefs. I love food. Thank you for listening, Mark. I want to go to your restaurant.
We definitely can. If you're in London, go and see Mark in The Dairy in Clapham. And another friend of mine works in there, Robin Gill. It's his restaurant. It's awesome. You'll eat good things. Shout out to The Dairy in Clapham.
Will we eat a three-course meal? I've always wondered, like, where that actually came from. Like, why do meals traditionally follow the, you know, small savoury, large savoury, and then a sweet treat trend?
I know, like, when you think about it, why don't we just eat a larger quantity of one delicious thing?
Like cheesecake.
Or, like, you know, like a nice slice of hot toast with melty butter.
Or lasagna.
Or stew, like a really lovely melty stew.
Have you ever had a tray bake where the crispy skin on a chicken leg is crackling worthy?
Oh, mac and cheese.
Burgers.
Chocolate mousse.
A good Indian.
Like tacos.
The naan bread dipped in the curry of the Indian.
Squid.
Oh, okay. We could literally sit here and list a million delicious things. But obviously at a base level, you know, all living things need to eat to survive. So when did we kind of take the small step away from just eating to survive and kind of adding a bit of variety to what we chow down on?
Well, for a long time, like, food, people enjoyed food, but food was a largely functional thing for the vast majority of the population. People would either cook for themselves and their families or get food from street merchants and street vendors. So unless you were in the noble ruling class kind of anywhere, you would eat to go to work and to have energy to sustain you during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a lot of foods from around the world, everything from like curries to ramen to stews to everything, they were typically stuff that went into one pot in the morning and were served in the evening. That's across the board. All of that seemed to have changed with one man who went by the nickname Ziryab in medieval Iraq.
Ziryab?
Yeah, Ziryab.
What a legend. How could one man change the game so much? My hero.
He was a fairly unbelievable guy. Like, honestly, we've researched a lot of things in this podcast, and this guy was really, really cool. His full name was Abu il-Hasan Ali ibn Nafi. I'm definitely pronouncing that wrong. if you have any advice on how to pronounce that, shoot us a message. But he was an early polymath from Mosul in Iraq.
Which is just another word for mega genius.
Yeah, so basically a polymath is somebody who is really good at loads and loads of stuff. So this dude, at the time, first and foremost, was one of the most respected musicians of the entire kind of the entire medieval era. He's known as the father of classical classical music, and was known worldwide as an incredible. He was known worldwide as an incredible musician. People think that he actually went to Spain in the first place because he became better than his teacher, who was the royal court musician in Iraq, and his teacher banished him out of offense.
Oh my god!
Because he upstaged him. Yeah,
that's nuts.
Absolutely nuts. But not only was he a musician, he was a teacher and a poet, and he had extensive knowledge of everything from like astronomy, beauty, fashion, geography, and culinary arts. And by all accounts, he was just an absolute boyo. Had like 8 sons, changed the way people dressed and everything. He was cool. So yeah, he kind of reset a ton of the standards for the way nobility did things in where he finally settled down, which was Al-Andalus, which later became Andalusia in Spain. So if you think about it, he was kind of like a medieval Iraqi influencer.
Do you reckon he had a 20% discount code for the local cloth vendor and his own range of makeup palettes? Hashtag spawn.
Well, funnily enough, this guy's actually thought to have been the first guy to set up beauty parlors.
No way.
Yeah. Set up beauty parlors for the Cordoban elite. So the elite from Cordoba at the time. And as well as inventing early forms of toothpaste and setting new hygiene standards, which spread all through medieval Europe. So
how have I not heard of this guy? This guy seems like he has invented the whole world. Well, where does his kind of link with food come into it then?
Well, as I mentioned before, food at the time was either a grab-and-go kind of affair for the workers or a huge opulent feast for the wealthy, where it was just as much about showing how powerful you were through sheer quantity as they were about the actual quality of the food.
Okay.
But as with everything, Ziryab did things a little differently.
Why would he want to change a giant opulent banquet where you could be eating things like swan and suckling pig and rabbit? And did you see the mental banquet cakes they had on the Great British Bake Off?
I did. And that said, like, but sometimes you don't want that. So Ziryab insisted, and records show that he was the first person ever to insist that he'd have a three-course meal, just as his standard meal. So it wasn't the one course eating for sustenance, and it wasn't the giant banquet.
Okay.
He always wanted the three-course meal, which started with the soup, followed by a main course, and then a dessert. He also revolutionized the setting of the table, insisting that there was a leather tablecloth used, and insisting that there was crystal goblets, which he found more efficient than metal.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't long that through his influence, this became the norm on the Iberian Peninsula, so basically Spain and Portugal, and that idea spread even further.
So, okay, we have the beginnings of the three-course meal. They can be tracked down to this absolute hyper-legend Ziryab, who I want to be my new best friend, and it all kind of took place in medieval Iraq. But I'm curious about the order. So as Mark asked in the question, why do we have a small savoury followed by a large savoury and then a sweet? There has to be some kind of reasoning for that.
Yeah, and it's funny. If you apply any kind of logic to the tradition of the order in which we eat a three-course meal, things can get a little confusing. Even speaking about this, there's a psychologist called Ben Hayden literally said, it's a puzzle because models of human decision-making about how rewards are distributed in time emphasize our fundamental impatience as humans. We want our rewards as soon as possible. So given a salad, an entree, and some chocolate cake, all standard psychological and economic models predict that you'll eat the cake first, then the entree, and the salad last.
But with the given tradition, we always eat the cake last.
Exactly. So Google and general kind of internet research didn't actually turn up too much info on this. So I had to look a little deeper into the history of the dessert and why it traditionally is the closing stroke of any meal.
Go on then, sweeten us up, Marcus.
So first of all, much like we found out in another episode that, you know, pineapples were a big balls out show of wealth, we can trace back final course desserts to around the 16th and 17th century, where among the aristocracy, dinners were a serious affair. And, you know, they'd start early and finish very, very late. Like, they were a long haul kind of thing.
And they were kind of a way to impress their friends and whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah. The goal was to impress. Aside from, you know, stuffing 14 birds into one another to create some kind of monstrous super bird. Or paying the equivalent of literally thousands of euro to have a pineapple sit on a pedestal in the middle of your dining table. The very last thing you'd ever want is for anyone to leave hungry or without feeling that they'd been taken care of.
Okay.
And since refined sugars were expensive and hard to come by, they were often given to people at the end of a meal to push them over the edge towards complete satisfaction.
So they could just roll them all home after they'd eaten nonstop for like 7 hours.
Yeah, and actually, that was kind of the idea. The dessert would often be prepared well in advance and could be heated up or served very easily so that it could just be brought out at the end of the meal and the staff could already be cleaning the kitchen and everything like that.
Oh, wow.
And even the word dessert comes from the French desservir, which is the verb to clear the table. It was the final blow that would push people over the edge and conclude a meal in grandel style.
That's amazing. So the whole thought of dessert is to kind of get people away.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
amazing. Because like even if you think of it, if you go out to a restaurant and you don't have dessert, often you're sitting there, you might have a drink or two and sit there for a long time and chat. Whereas if you have a dessert, I'm always like, meh. Time to go home and be a couch potato.
That's exactly it. It's always traditionally been, you know, kind of the signature at the end of the meal.
I don't know about you, but after that, I am ready for literally 20 courses right now, as many desserts as possible.
I'm absolutely starving. But
okay,
we have to have some meal facts
of
first.
Of course we do.
Okay, so these are kind of meal and food facts. So Nutella,
the most glorious substance in the world,
which was originally known as pasta guanduja, there you go, how's that for Italian pronunciation, was created in Italy when hazelnuts were used to stretch out rationed chocolate during World War II.
Wow.
The earliest version was a foil-wrapped loaf that could be sliced and served on a piece of bread. Imagine a loaf of Nutella.
Oh my God, that sounds incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we have loaves of Nutella anymore?
We can do. We can get some pasta de guayanduya.
Oh wow, that sounds like a good time.
The world's largest ever shrimp cocktail used 488 kilos of shrimp.
Oh wow.
50 litres of ketchup.
Oh!
And a whole bunch of other ridiculous amounts of stuff, and was served in an almost 2 meter high cocktail glass.
That's outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Think of how small a little shrimp is.
I know.
Madness. Okay, last one.
Oxfam did a global study to find out the world's favourite meal. Do you want to take a guess?
World's favourite meal. So think of something that is eaten all over the world. I feel like soup.
No.
Okay.
Officially, on a study done in 2007, Oxfam found that the world's favourite meal, and this is just for one course, not three, is actually pasta.
Hmm. Fair enough. Pasta is absolutely delicious. Boom, dicky, boom, dicky, boom, dicky, boom.
So there you have it, Mark O'Brien and all of the team in the Derry in Clapham. I hope that made a little bit of sense. And why, as a community, we've kind of centred around the three-course meal and made a bit of a tradition of it.
Yeah, shout out to Ziryab as well. What an absolute god.
Yeah, I think, you know what, if you're still kind of going with the hashtag New Year, New Me thing, I think we should bring back the hashtag Be More Like Ziryab.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to that episode. As always, we've got a massive bank of episodes that you can binge listen to at your leisure. We've got questions from far stretching corners of the globe on every topic that you can imagine. So check them out and please recommend them to your friends if you enjoy them.
Guaranteed, if you listen to all of them, the conversation you'll be able to strike up during your next 3 or 20 course meal will be better than it was before.
If you have a question that you would like Marcus and I to debunk, there's a few ways you can send it in to us. First off, you can do it on social media.
You can get us on Facebook. All you have to do is search In The Share with Taz and Marcus. Or if you're a Twitter kind of person, you can get us at In The Share Pod.
If you'd rather do it the old-fashioned way and send us in a question or a comment or a nice letter to our email, we're intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com.
I kind of want someone to write us a letter now.
I want people to give us their love. We want love.
We want love. But if you want to write us a letter, just send it to the Head Stuff Podcast Network. Google it and get the address and send it to us.
That would be cool. Magical.
That'd be really cool.
Speaking of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, thanks to Paddy and Alan and all the guys here for make the magic at Head Stuff happen. We couldn't do it without you.
A huge, huge thank you to Florence Robinson, our wonderful designer, who came up with their little showery cartoon logo. We love you, Flo. You're great.
And a final thank you goes to Dave Gertzman for our lovely music that goes something like this.
1, 2, 3, 4. Bum, chugga, bum, ba-bum, bum, ba-dum, bum,
bum, ba-dum, ba-bum, ba-da-da-bum, ba-bum. Next week's question.
Next week's question is a really, really, really interesting one. And it was asked by me. I'm really interested in time, and I was kind of thinking about it, and I was wondering, why do we have leap years?
That episode is going to be out next Monday in time for your morning shower. But in the meantime, keep scrubbing!
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
What's up, everyone? I'm Solo, an independent artist from Toronto, and you are listening to the New Spins Library on CKUT.
cette étincelle entre nous. Quest'amore, questa morte, un Dio vivo in un bel viso, è un orrore così forte che tormenta il cuore inciso. È un orrore così forte che tormenta il cuore inciso. Dunque mal di fugge amore, questa febbre, questa lue, che di pianti, che di pene, sempre un prodigo fure, che di pianti, che di pene.
knows that his clock is ticking. Every day I can't stop thinking I'll be laid in that hole that I am digging. Moments pass and time goes by, never stopping to ask why. But you're fooling me. Some time for you to borrow.
Well, that wraps it up for the New Spins Library on CKUT. Terminal 5 and the Sleepy King are up next. Keep on listening.
Mercredi 27 juillet 2022, c'est l'émission Sleepy King, poésie et musique, sur les ondes de CKUT.
There's no stronger wind than the one that blows down a lonesome railroad line. No prettier sight than looking back at a town you left behind. There's nothing that's as real as the love that's in my mind. Close your eyes, I'll be here in the morning. Close your eyes, I'll be here for a while. Lots of things along the road I'd surely like to see. I'd like to lean into the wind and tell myself I'm free. But your softest whisper's louder than the highway's call to me. Close your eyes, I'll be here in the morning. Close your eyes up.